Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Taboo. My name is Katrina Hindley. Today, I'm joined by Sam and our special guest, Alex Sherrick from The Home First. Today, the podcast is going to be about first-time buyers. Sam, would you like to introduce yourself?
Yep. Thank you for having me back. Sam Morris from Tab. I work on the sales team with everything business development and origination focused.
And Alex?
Hello, I'm Alex Sherrick, as you said, and my company, The Home First, helps first-time buyers.
Just give us a little bit of...
Basically give them a way of how to purchase. So I hold their hand throughout the entire process of buying a home. So that basically starts with getting them qualified by a mortgage broker, which is always, and I stress this all the time, literally the most important thing you need to do before you start searching. Everyone jumps straight to Rightmove and Zoopla and all these like search engines where you can find homes first, but I take them to a mortgage broker, make sure they know their numbers, and then we can start the process. So that essentially just involves taking them like through the searches, sending them options, going on viewings with them, and then helping them negotiate a good deal.
Perfect. Well, that kind of leads us nicely into our first question, which is, what are the steps to buying a house?
Okay, yeah, so as we just briefly touched on, we'll start with getting them qualified by a mortgage broker so you know your numbers. Literally, like I said, the most important thing to do. I'd say following that, you start focusing in on one area, maybe two areas. Look at the properties that you feel like will be right for you and fit within your budget. Once you get on viewings, I always say to everyone, make sure you have a list of like, I take 28 questions on every single viewing. I go with all my first time buyers onto their viewings. I just think I kind of add that element of a second opinion. Like if you go to a doctor, you'll go and see another one just so you can get another opinion, basically. Take them on all the viewings with them, ask all the right questions. Following that, we start negotiating. We get a good price agreed, ideally. Everyone asks like what type of standard discount you can get on a home. But I think the reality is it's always dependent on the situation. Sometimes you've got a seller who is really motivated to like get out of there and they'll take a discount. And sometimes you've got someone who's just like, I use the example of just chilling in the Bahamas somewhere, has a nice little investment in Clapham or something like that, bringing in a good rental value. And they're just not too fussed about selling. So in those cases, you get less of a discount. But once you've got the price agreed, the three main steps following that are reservation, exchange, and completion. So those are the three main steps of buying a home, following kind of going on the viewings, getting things accepted. So when you reserve something, that's literally when you've just got the offer agreed. Mm-hmm. So you've got a price agreed, you give them over your details, you start talking through which like solicitor you're going to use to represent you as your legal team, which mortgage broker you're going to use. Following that, you are on the road to exchanging contracts. So that's the part where when people talk about like buying homes mega stressful, that's the part they're referring to, because everything is out of your hands.
Yeah.
So you want your mortgage broker to basically go through all of the mortgage applications with you, get the surveyor down there. You're going to be talking with your legal team who's going to be going through all the property contracts with you. That's not fun at all. anyone who's been through it will know that it just is not fun. But once you've got to the point of exchange of contracts, which usually takes about, and this may be one of your questions, how long it takes to get there, about 4 to 6 weeks it can usually take, give or take the situation as to whether you're in a chain or just what delays there might be, because there's always delays, obviously. You pay your deposit, which is usually between 5 to 15%.
You pay your deposit at the moment of exchange?
Yeah. So at the moment you exchange contracts, that's essentially represented by your deposit payment.
When we've got a reservation in and we've agreed an offer, can and like in that time between reservation and exchange, can someone come in and, you know, take it away?
Yeah.
So until the money's gone, it's...
Yeah, so up until the point that you've exchanged contracts, you don't legally own the home, even though it might be reserved, it may be taken off the market, it might even still be on Rightmove, and often they keep it on Rightmove. Because up until the point of exchange, all you're doing is just chatting with lawyers. So the home, actually, you haven't actually put anything down. If it's a new build, sometimes you might put down 500 quid, £2,000, sometimes if it's a new build. But more often than not, all you've done is just sign some papers and none of that's legal. So you can get gazumped. So gazumped is the term, which is when someone comes in and puts an offer down higher than you. So you might have reserved the home for, say 300 grand. So, and you're talking to your lawyers and someone comes along and says, you know what, I want it for 315 grand, puts the offer forward and they accept that larger offer. You've just been gazumped.
Is that allowed?
Yes. Yeah, it's perfectly legal. It's not nice. Some people even, it may be unfair, you might call it. Yeah. It's just not very nice because it might create a bidding war. This happens a lot more with secondhand homes than it would with new builds because, as you can imagine, new builds, there are a lot more options mm-hmm. to look for in the development. So if something's sold, you can just go for something else. But in the secondhand market, it's lethal at the moment. It's crazy. It's a super hot market currently.
So you're seeing that happening a lot?
Yeah, it happened like 3 days ago.
Oh, really?
Yeah, to one of my purchases.
What do you do when that happens? Are you then there to sort of renegotiate?
That's really the only thing you can do is renegotiate. So you have to either come in at the same price or higher. And also, when it comes to buying a home, when you're buying a secondhand home, your background and your story has a lot to do with it. And when I say background and story, what I mean is, are you in a chain? Is your purchase non-dependent? So that means, are you dependent on a sale going through for you to be able to afford it? If you're someone who doesn't own a home, lives at home with your parents, you've got the cash there ready to put down the deposit, people like you a lot more as a buyer. So I'd say, like I said, up until the point of exchange of contracts, someone can come in and gazump you. But once you've exchanged contracts, you're then legally obliged to complete the rest of the purchase.
And then, so we've got exchange and then we've got completion. And then presumably completion is where I move in.
Mm-hmm.
What happens in between, or how long does that take? What's the differences between it? Can it happen on the same day?
Yeah, so it can actually happen on the same day, funnily enough. It's called a simultaneous exchange and completion, and it's just a lot of jargon, but that's basically when you pay your deposit and get your keys at the same time, because you will arrange your bank to transfer the full funds from your side to the seller. So the full purchase price is essentially then paid and your mortgage term begins. And you would have done that on the same day as paying your deposit. And so you can then get your keys. So you asked a great question, what the difference is between exchange and completion. Exchange is when you pay your deposit and you've legally signed that you're going to complete the purchase. There's no going back from there. Once you've exchanged, then you can have a beer or a non-alcoholic beverage, depending on who you are, and celebrate. Because at that moment, there's very 99% of cases go through.
Yeah.
And then once you complete, that's when the full funds are transferred from your side to the seller, and your mortgage term will begin, and you get your keys.
And what's the kind of maximum time that could be? Or is it like very,
usually 10 days, 10 okay. days
and
or so.
That's just you kind of getting your funds in order and...
Yeah. Yeah, just which having a completion day will be set.
Okay. And should you have your everything that in between exchange and completion sort of in order at the point of exchange anyway, and it's just tying up loose ends?
Yeah, essentially. So the bank would have sent a surveyor, or they'd have sent a valuer down to the property to basically give them the thumbs up that the property is worth the amount you're paying.
Mm-hmm.
If it's not, if they've looked at comparables in the area, so this is quite a good way that first-time buyers can be secure, knowing that they haven't overpaid for a property. So you buy a property for 500 grand, the bank will send a valuer down to the property for a valuation, and they'll come back to them and say, actually, it's not worth 500 grand because the same property sold next door for 470. So it gets downvalued, and the bank refused to lend on that. And so that kind of gives you the security, if that happens, that you know you're not overpaying if the valuation goes through nicely.
So quite a few steps then.
yeah, it's a very convoluted process. And I was thinking before, like just as I was coming here, that you go out and you like go for dinner or whatever, and you peruse the menu, you find the option that you like when you buy it, and you're only paying like 12 quid or whatever. People treat house purchases the exact same way, but they're spending £500,000. They scroll through Rightmove, go on the viewings, I like that one, I go for it, and then it gets weird and confusing. But there are so many things you should do within that period, the right amount of research, knowing how to buy the home. You should really learn before you buy a home.
Yeah.
And that's why I have a business.
That's why we're here as well.
Because we don't know.
Any more questions on steps to buying a house?
Well, what I'd like to understand is, during that process, how much of an influence could you, for example, could the Home First have between exchange and completion, and how much hand-holding would you need to do to assist with the process, be it with the valuers, with the mortgage company, the solicitors? Do you have any involvement in that at that stage?
So the way I like to operate is keeping it all under my roof, essentially, where I will recommend them every single first-time buyer that I speak to on the phone. They then get introduced to a mortgage broker. Once they buy the home, they then get introduced to a solicitor. And then through them, the solicitors will help them out with all the legal work, because I've got no clue about that. And yeah. most property professionals don't have a clue what's going on there. I'm not going to pretend to know. And then the same side with the mortgage aspect as well. I put them in touch with a mortgage broker instead of a bank. The reason being, with a bank, you go there, you get the rates that a bank offers. But if you go to a mortgage broker, you can see all of the lenders and their criteria and the rates that they can offer. It's like going on comparethemarket.com to go and find your car insurance. You're not going to just go to one car insurance company. You want to see what everyone offers. So I take them to these various steps. And I think it's basically laying the foundations for their entire purchase. And then not just that, but going on the viewings, asking the right questions, make sure you know what's going on.
What kind of, just quickly before we move on, what kind of questions are you asking then? Or is that...
You mentioned earlier you had your 28 questions.
I have 28 questions. I'm not going to name all of them. Otherwise,
this
no one's going to talk to me
anymore. This
episode
just got a whole lot longer.
Yeah, no one will talk to me if I name all 28 questions.
So you've come up with your own 28 reasonable and almost... almost definitely necessary questions.
Yeah, some of them are very normal questions, like what's the service charge, what's the lease length, what's the ground rent. Very average questions that if you don't ask that on a viewing, you haven't gone and done the right job. But then also some alternative questions like, what feedback have you had from viewing so far? So you can ask the estate agent, what's been the general feedback? Why is it still on the market? You know, it's been on the market for a month and a half, why hasn't it been sold yet? There's always a reason.
Yeah.
Those type of questions where you can, depending on the estate agent, and most I've dealt with are very lovely people, you want to be able to flesh out the human side of an estate agent. Mm-hmm. So they come to you and say, you know what, people haven't bought it because the windows are really small, or it's north facing and it's not very bright, or there's a bit of damp in the bathroom and some people don't want to repair that. Those type of things. And you know when you're dealing with a human estate agent, because they'll talk to you about that honestly. And I think a lot of the viewings is also fleshing out that honesty there, because no property is perfect. You're always going to have to compromise.
Cool. Well, thank you. Moving on to question two. Who qualifies as a first-time buyer?
Well, someone...
What is a first-time buyer?
So you would qualify for a first-time buyer if you haven't bought a home before. But interestingly enough, not just that. If you haven't inherited a home as well, if someone hasn't bought a home for you... So essentially, your name cannot be on the title of that home. So if you inherit something, or if you bought a property from your parents or something like that, and your name is on there, you have become a first-time buyer. So anything outside of that realm, you're essentially not a first-time buyer.
And is that restricted, is the home you talk about restricted to being your residence? Because if somebody purchased an investment property and then they were looking to purchase their first home, is there a definitive difference?
No. So you have a home that you've purchased, and that makes you a first time buyer, whether it's a buy to let or whether it's a buy to live.
As soon as you own a property, you're no longer a first time buyer.
And you also get a nice extra tax on that.
What if I own a property abroad?
Mm.
Can I be a first time buyer in the UK?
Yeah. So it's also a very good question. And the answer is no, you can't. But, I think
there's always a but.
it depends what you disclose to your solicitor. But speaking legally without loopholes, you know, that kind of honesty to the conversation, if you own a property abroad, you have a property to your name.
What about if I have a partner and we're buying together and he owns a property or she, but I do not own a property?
Yeah.
Who's the first time buyer?
You're the first time buyer if you don't own a property. But obviously, if you're buying with a partner and both your names are going to be on there, your partner and you will have to pay the added stamp duty that you get. It's an extra 3% on top.
Ah.
Yeah. Of the purchase price.
Sounds like the only benefit is they have you there to split the cost with.
That's the only benefit.
Fortunately, yeah. I'm not in that position.
Yeah,
so.
You do have a lot more purchasing power buying as a couple. Obviously, you have two salaries as well.
Yep.
I get a lot of questions often from people saying, I'm a single person buying on my own. How the hell do I do it? And there are very difficult answers to that. But I think the reality is there's different buying schemes, which I'm sure we'll go into. But the idea is that you would need to look at kind of those alternatives, because, you know, someone commented on a TikTok of mine the other day and just said the banks are so geared to selling to people who are buying with another person. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, what he said was, if one person dies, then they can still pay off the mortgage, basically, because there's another person to pay it.
Yeah.
Very morbid and not nice, but that's some people's opinion.
Well, I guess that answers who's the first time buyer.
You are.
I guess moving on to question number three. What cost do I need to consider as a first time buyer? We've touched on them a little, but kind of in general, start to finish, how much is it going to cost me?
Well, I'd say the obvious one to start with is your deposit.
Yep.
So your deposit will range from anything from 5% of the purchase price to 15% of the purchase price. And that's really down to the scheme that you might use to purchase. So usually if you're using something like the Help to Buy scheme or the 95% mortgage guarantee scheme, only a 5% deposit, but other times it can be up to 15%. For a buy-to-let investor, as a first-time buyer, they need to put down 25% deposit of the purchase price. So that's essentially the first main cost that you have to save. And everyone eventually saves that. You know, people who are looking to buy their first home, they hit their deposit and they think, wow, okay, great, ready to go. But, and then, like you said, there's always a nice but.
Yep.
You've got a lot more costs to consider, and to run through some of them, stamp duty would be the biggest one. So stamp duty, you're looking at between 2 to 12% as a tax.
And what is stamp duty? And as a first-time buyer, is there reductions in stamp duty?
So there was.
Stamp duty, sorry.
So to answer what stamp duty is a tax that was brought in the 1600s, I think it was. It's basically a tax repayment to, I think it's King William III or something, or the royal family, to essentially pay them back for a war that they had with France. And like all good taxes, it never went away. 400 years later, it's still here. So it's essentially a tax that you have to pay. It's obviously been added to all property purchases. There was introduced during the pandemic by Rishi Sunak a stamp duty holiday for first-time buyers up to 500k. That really stimulated the market. Ended June 30th, I think it was. Over that kind of six-month period leading up to it, the market was crazy last year. Ideally, it was... nicely, actually, it was the first kind of 9 months or so of my business. Mm. So I was busier than I'd ever been working for a company as well. But again, it's going to be between 2% and 12%, depending on the price bracket that you're purchasing at. And so you have to pay it in cash as well.
Wow.
When I say cash, I don't mean notes. I mean, like, you can't get a loan for it. You can't get a mortgage for it. You have to pay that within 14 days of getting your keys.
So stamp duty is paid after completion.
Mm.
And it can be 2% to 12%.
Yeah, depending on the purchase price. There's loads of calculators online which will tell you what your stamp duty is. But just to give you a nice, true example, we're in Mill Hill right now, I had someone buy a two bed, 550K in Mill Hill. Stamp duty, you're looking at about 17.5 grand. And that, for most people, is a deposit.
Yeah.
That's a deposit for a lot of people. If you're paying, you know, 5% deposit, that's your deposit, that's 17.5 grand. So that's definitely one thing you need to account for when you're saving for a property. Once you know what your affordability is because you've been qualified by a mortgage broker, then you want to go online and find out how much stamp duty you're going to pay so you can start saving big time for that as well. Another cost you want to consider are your legal fees. So you'll be dealing with a lawyer because they'll be going through all these horrible property contracts with you. They're not horrible. They're quite nice, but there's necessary. They're necessary. There's a lot of jargon. You'll pay them anything from £1,000 to £2,500, depending on who they are, where they're based. If they're in London, they're more expensive. If they're outside of London, they're often cheaper.
Could you get an outside of London lawyer in to do a London property?
Yes. And a lot of people do that. But I think people think, oh yeah, I know that law firm on the high street. Or more often than not, an estate agent or a developer will recommend you a legal team to use. They'll get kickback from introducing them as a law firm. More often than not, with new build developments, I'll recommend going forward with that. The reason being is that this law firm has dealt with multiple purchases on the development, has answers to the queries, and then can take it forward a lot more efficiently. But always good to shop around.
What about, so on the legal costs, convincing and solicitors, are they the same thing? Are they wrapped up into one?
Yeah.
There is a podcast on conveyancing as well.
So I saw that.
I know the answer. But
I'm going to say yes.
I'm going to say yes.
And then also, what about surveyors? Does that, like, if I need to get a building surveyor in?
You want to do that, for sure. You pay the cost. £200 is what you're going to look to pay. relatively cheap considering what they do, because they'll look at the full build structure. And obviously being in a time that we are, where there have been so many house fires and big mm-hmm. blocks which should have been repaired but weren't, these fires going on, you want to get a surveyor in to make sure everything's in check.
What about estate agent fees? Is that a thing?
So if you're the purchaser, no. I have never come across a time where you have to pay an estate agent to sell you a home. You're usually just pay, it sounds silly, but like the seller will pay the estate yeah. agency fee. So again, you've got your deposit, you've got stamp duty, you've got your legal fees, you've got a fee for a surveyor. You will most likely have a fee for a mortgage broker. Mm-hmm. So when you have a mortgage broker, you'll either be paying them, say the mortgage broker I recommend is about £400, £395, I think. You'll usually be paying them. Sometimes you can get a fee-free mortgage broker, and they receive their fee from introducing you to the lender. They yeah. receive their fee from the lender. Not too much of a difference between the two. So I guess more ideal to go with the one that's free.
And I had a question sent in from a friend. and she yep. was she was buying her first home. They during their legal process, something went wrong with the boundary and they needed to take out a policy. And it was, she was like, I didn't know, we weren't sure who was supposed to pay. So understanding at what point the seller pays or the purchaser pays would have been useful, because obviously it's an extra cost.
Yeah.
Is that?
It's a very contentious topic because no one wants to pay. Seller, buyer, solicitor.
Yeah.
No one wants to pay this, whether there's an indemnification going on or like you're saying here, no one wants to be the person that has to cough up the cash. Often first time buyers largely can feel like they're opening their pockets and they're allowing whoever to come in and do that. In those cases, you want to make sure you've got a bloody good lawyer that you trust. You want to make sure you're advised through the process so you know where you're being taken advantage of if the unfortunate case does arise. But it can often fall on the head of the first time buyer.
And you mentioned indemnity.
Yeah.
What is that?
Well, that's if you're, that's basically something that, it protects you from something that may go wrong. So for example, if you're purchasing a property where there haven't been the right planning permissions for it and they haven't gone through, and you can basically take a view and say, you know what, I'm still going to go ahead here, even though it hasn't got the right planning permission, you can apply for that and then basically be covered if something does go wrong. But again, who does the burden of the cost fall upon? Often the first time buyer.
Any more questions?
None from me.
Cool.
This is all very informative.
Yeah.
So I don't even need to ask any.
Great. Moving on to question number four then.
Oh, there is one more cost.
Oh, yeah, go on.
Sorry, there is one more cost that I just remembered. There's an arrangement fee. So an arrangement fee is a fee that you pay to the bank for arranging your mortgage. This is outside of what what you'll pay to the mortgage broker. That's sometimes called a product fee. You can pay £1,000 for that.
Oh, wow.
It's quite a hefty fee to just get out of nowhere. So what a lot of people do is just put that on top of the cost of the mortgage, which you can do, and just repay it back.
So we've got deposit,
stamp duty, legal fees, mortgage broker fees, potentially arrangement fees. And obviously you want to factor in moving costs, costs of furniture, the cost of maybe paracetamol because it's horrible.
Can you add that one to your mortgage as well?
Yeah.
49p.
You pay interest on it,
so
though.
So a few costs.
Yeah.
Lots to think about.
And a lot of costs that people aren't aware of as well.
Yeah.
You can go online and find a lot of this information, but there's a million websites and a million different terms of the same thing. And so that's why I feel like it's nice to just come to someone like me who can tell you it all and put it on a piece of paper for you, basically.
Make it really simple.
There's a lot of value in your expertise, your knowledge, and just your ability to answer questions. Mm.
Cool. Question number four. What type of mortgage is best for a first-time buyer? Or maybe more, what should I do as a first-time buyer when I'm looking for a mortgage?
Yeah. So I would say speak to a mortgage broker. And that's really the best advice you're going to get when you're figuring out what mortgages you should get. There are so many variants of mortgages that you can find on the internet, and they're all as confusing as the other one. But all you need to do is talk to someone who like really knows what they're talking about and can dumb it down and explain it to you like you're a child, basically. And that's not to be condescending in any way, shape or form. But the reality is you're spending £500,000 sometimes on buying a property, and you need to be given the information in a way in which we can all understand it. Yeah. And, you know, there's just to take one random mortgage, for example, there's a joint borrower sole proprietor, JBSP. And that's basically when you buy the property and you have a guarantor, like a parent, for example, and their name isn't on the mortgage, but you're borrowing the money together, essentially, but you're the sole proprietor of the property itself. And you see that online and you're like, what the hell does that even mean? Yeah. But once you explain it, it gives you a lot more purchasing power. It can be a very positive way of buying a home. And then it all starts to sound like a lot more simple. But there's that. There's, and what most people use to buy, most first-time buyers use the Help to Buy scheme. And so the Help to Buy scheme is exclusively for new builds, which...
We will touch on this later.
Yeah.
Which, do not talk too much.
Yeah, not a lot of people are fans of, but some people are. So Help to Buy, we will touch on later.
So if you're looking for a mortgage or want to understand them, go to a mortgage broker.
Yeah, or speak to me and I'll put you in touch with a mortgage broker.
It sounds like you'll be able to answer a lot of the questions, and then where they might need a specific individual to assist with something like the mortgage, then you can introduce them to people that, again, are just as experienced with helping first-time buyers and then finding a mortgage.
Exactly, and that's why I try to keep it all under one roof, because... You know, someone that I work with who's looking for a home, I make them know full well that I've got no clue what I'm talking about when it comes to what you could be lent. You know, I know the percentages, obviously, but when it comes to things like what your potential repayments are, what your interest rates might be, all those type of things, don't talk to me about that.
Yeah.
Talk to a mortgage broker, because then you can have it set in stone, clear as day, knowing exactly what your numbers are and how that all works out, essentially.
Sorry about that.
Stop moving.
Yeah. Is it the one rule of podcasts? You don't touch the microphone.
Yeah, I've kept my hands in my lap.
I know.
I'll move them away. Question number five. What are the benefits of being a first-time buyer?
And may touch on...
You may touch
help
on
to buy here. The benefits of being a first-time buyer, like we said before, aside from the fact that you don't have to pay any mortgage, you'll just be living at home. Aside from that, once you do end up buying your first property, you can use the Help to Buy scheme. So some people will see this as a benefit and some people will think it's a scam. That's the general feedback when you use very 50-50, general feedback you look with Help to Buy. Help to Buy is a government scheme where they put forward an equity loan into your purchase. So what that essentially means is, instead of you paying 15% and then having an 85% mortgage, you'll pay 5%, so it's a much lower deposit. You then get a 40% equity loan from the government, and then you have a 55% mortgage. So you have two loans instead of one, but the benefit of that is having a smaller deposit. Okay?
How might those numbers change if you're purchasing the property with somebody?
They don't. Those numbers don't change, so you always get a 40% equity loan from the government. That's within London. That's helped to buy London. Outside of London, it's up to 20%. Obviously, the values of properties are lower outside of London, depending on where you're going. So you'll have a 40% equity loan, whether it's just you or another person buying with you.
With Help to Buy, I've got a mortgage and I've got Help to Buy, would they likely be from the same lender? I'm trying to think of it in my head. Have I got
where
two
does it
payments
come from?
To,
come
one
from?
To the government,
you've got
one
two
to,
separate payments. You've got two, right, yeah. You've got two separate payments. And then for the first 5 years, the interest is low to nothing, and then after 5 years your interest rates start increasing every single year, and so after 5 years you can very potentially find yourself in a position where you're paying your mortgage and you're paying a relatively hefty government equity loan. So the idea behind Help to Buy is that it's a young professional using it, say they're in London, and potentially their salary could increase in the 5 year period, and you use those salary increases to start paying off your equity loan within that 5 year period, or people will sell after 5 years.
And what about Help to Buy ISAs and those sort of things? Well, maybe it's just that one.
So Help to Buy ISA, they can be great. And I often recommend people using them. And a lot of people do. I'm pretty sure you can't open a Help to Buy ISA anymore. You can open like regular lifetime ISAs, but they just had different benefits at the time. This is going back a year or two now. And a lot of people use them to buy homes, but I think it's a good way to help promote your deposit, basically. There was a nice article that came out that I posted about yesterday Which was a lady who said that the best way to save for a deposit is cancelling Netflix and cancelling the gym. I don't know if you saw that.
Oh, yeah.
And don't go on holiday, basically.
Is that true?
And I think it's just a bit depressing. I think it's a bit depressing because whenever I talk to people about saving, and Help to Buy ISAs come into this, ISAs in general come into this, you want to save for a property, but you don't want to like rid your life of all of its enjoyment, basically. You know, the buying a home isn't the be all and end all of your existence. You can still have fun and enjoy your life and go out for dinner, but just maybe cut down on being too excessive. But Help to Buy is really a good way to purchase. One of the main things about it that people don't like is that it means you can exclusively purchase a new home. You can't purchase a secondhand property, meaning you can't purchase a property that someone has previously lived in. You have to buy a home direct from the developer, and some people aren't a fan of buying a new home.
And I guess briefly, what are the downsides of being a first-time buyer? I guess
it's bloody expensive. It's really expensive. Also, just the fact that you haven't purchased a property before and you're going through the process for the first time already puts you at a disadvantage in comparison to someone who's bought it before. The reason is, if you haven't bought a home before, you haven't gone through the process, so you don't know what you're doing unless you've done the right research, or unless you have a buying agent like Home First basically come and help you through the process. Because like I said, most people are putting down their life savings. If they haven't got any kind of help from bank of mum and dad or grandma and grandpa, then they're going to be using their life savings, and you want to use it properly.
I mean, I've got a few other questions that aren't related necessarily to the benefits that our listeners have sent in. Well, I'll I just asked all my friends to ask many questions.
I'll try and ask them.
And one was, you mentioned the cladding.
Yeah.
And as a kind of first-time buyer, how can I be aware of the cladding issues? Is that something that the building surveyor will cover and will tell me about?
That's why you want to get a very good surveyor in to come and have a look at the property. It's one of the main things that most people ask these days, obviously with the tragedy of Grenfell Tower. And that's the only one that really made the news as well. There have been other places where this has happened, hasn't made the news as much as Grenfell did, because I think that was just in an area of extreme wealth, you know, in the London borough of Kensington and Chelsea. And then something as horrible as that can happen there. That's why, you know, it really did make the news. Obviously, there are a lot of lives that were lost there. But I think that having a really good surveyor to come in and have a look at the property, and just knowing your stuff when it goes to buying a home, is really going to protect you here.
I'm going to jump in again. What can the what can buyers do before they're at the stage of discussing a particular property with their valuer, with their surveyor, to identify whether or not they're looking at a building that may have particular cladding on it that they might want to avoid?
So you can quite simply ask the estate agent or the developer what the cladding is made from, if it's not a brick built development, which often they're not these days. You'll need to ask what the cladding is made from, and then you can do your research. You can speak to someone who's in the know. You can start Googling things, because sometimes you'll find that if a building is under a certain height, they don't need the same forms that tower blocks need. And so you might come into a circumstance where it's not the right type of cladding. From what I've seen, developers are trying to steer clear of very dodgy cladding these days, of course.
Yep.
I know one development in North London, for example, which kind of halted all of its construction, and it's a tower block, for about 3 years so that they could reassess all of the cladding. It's a very important topic.
You mentioned finding a really good building surveyor. How does one go about that?
Often you'll be recommended a building surveyor by either your mortgage broker. Sometimes your legal team could recommend one. I can recommend building surveyors. It's just a case of either doing your due diligence online. Buying a home requires a lot of Googling. I say that's where you'll spend a lot of your time as well, just ensuring that you're speaking to people who know what they're talking about and can help you properly.
I think, well, the others kind of amenities, schools, et cetera. How do they affect price?
So that's a really nice question, actually, because I think, you know, you might have someone listening who's more interested in an investment or looking to see what their what the sale price might be in 5 years' time when they look to sell. I'd say having amenities in the local area is what I usually say is one of the most important things if you're looking for a property that no one's going to say it can go up X percentage in value. If they do, they're lying. All you can do is look at, you can look at price growth over the previous number of years, but that's never a depiction of what may happen over the next 5 to 10 years. But you want to look at things like, what local schools have you got in the area? Are they rated well? Are you close to public transport, bus, trains? How long does it take you to get into the city is another thing. Do you have local shopping facilities? Is the high street nice and pleasant? Are you close to green spaces, local parks? Those type of things that no matter what your property looks like, if it's a shell on the inside and people want to rip everything out and change it, you can't change the local area. You want to know the investment going into the area by the government. There are some areas now which are regenerating really, really well and might not look nice now, but in 10 years' time, you will touch it with a barge pole. You just may not now. So those are the things you want to look at.
And how would one, is that just kind of research on Google, et cetera?
Yeah, yeah. It will. What I actually say to first-time buyers quite often is when you go on viewings, do a walk around the area. Some people do their commute as well, going from work to the, just so you can see what it's like in rush hour. Because what you can't do before you've bought it is see what your journey is going to be like in the morning. So go and do your journey. Go to the local high street, like we've got Gales here, go and sit outside and have a coffee, do some people watching and get an idea of the ilk of the area, see if it's somewhere you'd feel comfortable. And you can't, most people don't do that until they move in.
Can't test drive a home.
No, exactly. Yeah. You should be able to test drive a home.
Are there any homes?
You should be able to go and, I said this to someone recently, go and live in a house for a weekend before you buy it.
Try before you buy.
Yeah.
Is there anyone that's clever? Not that
I know
of,
but if there's anyone out there who wants to start that, I'll partner up with them.
Have a sleepover for a night.
Yeah, yeah.
That'd be so.
Get a takeaway.
Yeah, because you don't know how loud the road is.
Yeah, yeah. That's another thing you also want to look out for when you're going to view a home. And one of the questions I always ask is, what do you know about the neighbours? Yeah. Always ask the estate agent, because sometimes they bump into them. Being down at a property as long as they would be, they might bump into an estate into a neighbour. And they can give some more insight into, you know, it's a young person who always has parties, or it's not a young person who has parties.
Not
or
guilty.
Yeah. There you go. Or a family who live there, nice young family, older person who's retired. You want to get an idea. And often, you know, I even say to people, and people never take me up on this advice, is like go and knock next door and say hello. No one ever does that. But I think it's quite a good idea because then you know who your neighbours are.
True. Cool. Any final questions, Sam?
None from me, because this is making me realise there's so much more that people could do. And they're simple things, knocking on your neighbour's door and just having a conversation with someone.
Yeah, I think but the reality is, and the drive and goal behind my business, and I think all you need to do is look at my Instagram page and you'll see how much I enjoy what I do, is that first-time buyers need help because they've never purchased a property before and they're spending their life savings and it's not right for them to feel like they're being taken advantage of. So this is what I'm here to stop, basically.
And I guess if anyone has any more questions, they can ask Alex. And where can they find you?
At The Home First on Instagram, At The Home First on TikTok, thehomefirst.com on the internet. Or you can just try and find my number online. I think it's on my website. Just call me.
We'll put them all in the show notes as well. That has been Tab U, Season 2. Episode 2, First Time Buyers. Thanks for joining, and I'll see you next time. Oh, don't forget to like, subscribe, comment. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you, Alex.
Thanks, Alex.
Cheers.
Thanks, Sam.